By the skin of my teeth, I made it in today. Now, listen, I'm not complaining. It's first world problems.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you something. The tunnels in this city,
yeah,
they're two. Well, they're more than two. There's the Midtown Tunnel.
Yeah.
There's the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. Yeah. That goes to the other side.
That goes to Brooklyn.
The Lincoln Tunnel gets you into Midtown.
Correct.
The Holland Tunnel, named after the country, I'm kidding, gets you into Lower Manhattan.
Yeah, it does.
But it was not meant for the kind of traffic you see.
No.
Market call, March 7th, Thursday, 1 o'clock on the East Coast. Rangers traded for probably the best-looking man in the National Hockey League. I'm just telling you, Google the guy's pictures. It's remarkable. I'm not even kidding around. We'll put it up on the screen at some point. Wennberg is a stud Swede, and he's so happy to be here.
The Swede. They're just going to call him the Swede.
No, they're not. Trade deadline is tomorrow, 3 o'clock. Today, Carter Braxton Worth.
Yeah.
And if it's Thursday,
it's Butters.
Bitch, yes, it is. So let's take
a
look.
Hold on a second here, okay? Because you're naming all these tunnels. You're dropping all these things. You missed the tunnel. What's the one tunnel in Manhattan?
Bridge and Tunnel Club.
Nope.
The B&T Club.
Nope.
That's what they call, like, the people that come in.
Nope. It is the Murray Hill Tunnel on Park Avenue in the 30s.
In the city.
That's, I said, in Manhattan.
Yeah, you're not going underwater.
But people don't know that.
No, I understand.
I know
that.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. No. I understand. That's like over by like the United Nations.
It's on Park Avenue
the
30s.
You go up.
It only goes north now. It used to go north-south.
No kidding.
It was closed for a bit. Okay, so you guys can check
that
out here. We got
to put up a picture of this Wennberg guy at some point because I'm going to send it to
you. They're going to get him. Don't worry about that.
Right, should we look at the rundown?
Let's do it.
Take a look.
Let's see.
Chart check. I love just saying it. S&P 500. I mean,
the key juncture would be that it goes up every day.
Market's open, and that's why.
Yeah.
Costco, Broadcom, Marvell preview.
Yeah.
There are two Marvells. There's the one with the cartoons, and then there's obviously the tech. And then, as I mentioned, FactSet's earnings insight. Hard to say multiple times. It's like Ben Affleck and Matt Damon when they were doing that little skit together. It's really
the
Dunk genius.
Kings.
I love those guys. They're fans of Market Call. Anyway, let's look at the charts because why not? I mean, it's just outrageous. We'll put up.
Well, let's start.
You want to start a different way? Start a different way. Look at these sectors. Everything's up.
Yeah,
look at that. You see green? That's what means higher.
So this is really interesting to me, though. Like, so when you think that, so they sorted this by what's up year to date here.
Everything.
Obviously, so the communication services sector, we know it's in there. It's all the biggest mega cap tech stocks. It's up nearly 10% on the year. You see what it's up just today, just absolutely raging. The XLK is obviously everything else that's not. There's some hardware names in the semis and stuff like that in there. There's also a bunch of fintech here. I mean, Guy, when you look at this here, so we're like, what, 2 months into the year here. We're pretty much getting towards the back end of, you know, Q1 earnings or so. We spent a lot of time talking about, and this was FactSet data here, we're quoting, you know, that, you know, in the Q4 of last year, which obviously clearly outperformed in many ways earnings and obviously performance in the stock market, you know, the top seven stocks, which are no longer magnificent in our opinion, because we lost a few of them. They had 60% year over year earnings growth. The rest of the 493 had a 1.5% drop or so. When we get out of the gate like this, and it's the same leadership, and this is also a really important narrative. When we're in the bear market in 2022, and some of the hardest hit names were the XLC and the XLK guy, remember the narrative that it wasn't going to be the prior leadership that leads us out of it? And you and I were actually exactly on the other side of that. My whole thing was Q's and twos. You remember that? Mm-hmm. Just keep buying the Q's, average in the whole way down. And that has worked out brilliantly. But at this point, Guy, at this stage of the year, it's feeling a little exuberant.
Well, yes. But I mean, think about it. We could have said that at any point over the...
We had said it.
And we've had said it. So if I'm being honest, which I try to be,
yes,
I mean,
you do.
You know, what's say Thursday, Tuesday?
Yep.
Which obviously you had a big sell-off. The market bounced late in the day, still had a pretty significant sell-off. It's like it never happened, you know, which is remarkable if you think about it. We're at all-time highs today in the S&P 500.
Yeah.
So that erased all those things. And the VIX, which looked like it wanted to party, is back below 14.5, although today effectively unchanged, which I guess is sort of interesting. The Russell, we mentioned the IWM, that 205 level in the IWM. If we put up a chart real quick, that's through it right now. We'll see if it maintains that. you know, that's looking pretty interesting. And that's a shorter term chart. Yep. Throw up a longer term chart and you'll see the resistance level.
I mean, listen, on a 1 year, I mean, like every which way you look at the Russell 2000, yeah, it's kind of hard to say, I don't want to buy it. I mean, let's be honest. We've been talking about this level here. It's been 18 months or so. This consolidation been a great trading range. But again, for those in the camp of broadening out, if it's going to, the market's going to broaden out, this would be one of the spaces. But I just can't get that excited about it other than trading the ETF or the futures guy as one sort of trade, because as a group of stocks, not particularly interesting. Microsoft's market cap is greater than the whole, you know, 2000 grouping of them.
You know, but this is, I mean, let's focus on trading for a second, because given the move we've seen, here's the risk reward trade. And I want to emphasize, like, I'm not raging, but I'm not anything, but you know, sometimes trades present themselves. So we've talked about this level in the IWM. Let's take it one step further and look at this. If you want to be long here, to your point, your stop is 204 ish. So your stop is relatively close on the downside, and what you're looking for, potentially a move to prior all time highs. And this is one that if you get it cold, if it starts to work for you, you can start to add on strength, and that stop pretty much remains the same. And if it's working, then you can sort of make it a trailing stop. You could raise your levels, but the risk reward, given the fact that we're through those levels, I mean, the trade is right in front of you. Now there's a good chance it doesn't work. There's an equally good chance that, you know what, the levels are set forth and you're on cruise control here in terms of what the stop out is and what the upside, I think, level that you're looking for is as well.
Yeah. No, and again, I mean, like, if you're going to get a pop, it's going to be that the S&P is raging. There's something going on in the yield front. You know, people, the data is, I guess it's kind of Goldilocksy. I know that's a term, guy, that you will never use, but you'll kind of make a face at me when I use it.
Yeah.
All right. Here's one of the things. So Carter joined us on Monday's market call. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not feeling well.
No, well, yeah, getting better.
Getting better.
And we appreciate all of that. So he's coming back today, and just before we tee him up in a second, but he did this thing on Tuesday. He put out a report on Worth Charting that just got me really excited. It got me geeked up for a whole host of reasons. I love how he just kind of thinks about different time frames and the like here. And sometimes we stare at a 1 year chart, sometimes you stare at a much shorter term chart, you have a view, but sometimes it really does help to take some long term views, put them in a log sort of setup. He did that with the S&P. He's going to run us through it right now here. This is the chart check that we are doing
here.
So this is Carter Braxton Worth of Worth Charting. Welcome,
look at him,
sir.
Look at him, pensive, like a Rodin. You know that Rodin Museum thinker in Philadelphia, by the way?
Yeah.
Tremendous.
Yeah, I've been there.
Tremendous.
It's wonderful.
Man, how are you?
How are you?
Long-term, short-term.
And by the way, many of you people had Rodin on your bingo cards. So tough shit. Anyway, well, sorry. Please continue.
No one, along with the Murray Hill Tunnel. Now, well, it's interesting. Of course, there is one more tunnel, right, Dan, underneath the MetLife building, no longer the MetLife Panhandle.
Oh, yeah.
For a brief moment there, after you used the Murray.
Yeah, that was actually the Pan Am building. If you really want to go back in time.
Pan American building.
Anyway.
We did that. Carter, so talk to us a little bit about, like, what Guy just said I thought was really interesting on the trading front, looking at the Russell 2000. You don't really have to opine on that one way or another, but it's like, his point is like, it's either going to get this pop, it's going to break out, right, as the S&P and the NASDAQ are making new highs every day, or it's not. And if it's not, you probably want to cut your losses pretty quickly.
Very quickly.
Because it's obviously on a relative basis, is that poor. Thoughts on that whole idea of kind of getting in and trying to play something for the long side after some of the other stuff has worked really well?
Well, that's right. I mean, in principle, small cap is higher risk and higher beta. And in almost all market bottoms, you get outperformance from beta. And that's not happened this time. Since the October low of 2023, we don't have, or 2022, we don't have outperformance in the case of small caps. Half the stocks in the Russell 2000 are profitless. And they all add up, all of them, to the market cap of Apple and perhaps JP Morgan combined. And so it cuts both ways. There's a lot of leverage in the operating businesses that don't make money, that are lower quality. And yet for some reason, they have not led the way, which is typical when you're in a very aggressive period of accumulation for equity. So it's both unprecedented and has some reasons to it. The question is, does it pop? Does it move out of this range? Is it the upper band of a range? And if it does it work easily through the overhead supply or not? It really is a pair of twos. I think you have to fall back on that. Sometimes it's better just not to trade. My hunch is this is not going to be fish or fowl, just going to be stuck.
Carter, really quickly, because again, just to remind some of our viewers, some of our listeners, you know, you put out your reports, you have a big retail following, lots of folks who listen to us, watch us. I'm sure there's a whole host of other ones who follow you on CNBC's Fast Money for all these years. But you also talk to a lot of really good sized institutions, right? You spent the bulk of your career, I'd say 90% of your career on, you know, in the institutional space. What are some of the sort of questions you're getting right now? I'm seeing lots of really interesting sort of mea culpas out there. Guy, I guess we do it every day.
every day, in
some way, shape, or form. I'm just curious, like, what are, because I know that this is also a rally that some of the smartest investors, and I'm not just trying to put ourselves, because me and Guy and myself, we've been kind of bearish of late here over the last few months or so, but a lot of the smart investors that I know have gotten this move wrong. And I'm just curious, like, what are some of the things you're hearing from the investor class?
Right. So what people say when they're having a conversation is different from what their mandate is in many ways. And that's, you'd expect that. So an individual investor can just say, I'm not doing this. I'm putting it all in cash. I want to take a break. I'm putting it all in biotech for a big catch-up trade. I'm going to be short, you know, semis because they've gone too far. I'm going to dig around and find depressed energy stocks that are value. When you're being mandated to, whether it's at the mutual fund level or the long short hedge fund equity level, or you're a pension plan or a major endowment or family, your mandate doesn't allow any of that, right? And then not only is it just, you have to be fully invested because they're not paying you to manage cash, you also are very dedicated. You might be mid-cap TMT, right? Or small cap value. And so there is no choice. You have to play. You have to be fully invested in the long only side, which is the bulk of the money. And therefore, it's just choosing between picks, which one's the more desirable. So while people might, and many do, think this has come a long way, gone too far, that's not relevant to their mandates. And so most of the conversations that I have with institutional clients are, hey, within healthcare, and you know, we are a general manager, for instance, and we have to beat the S&P or try to. What do you like within healthcare? It's not about, should we sell the market or is the market too steep? So the answer is, while people have those individual proclivities as humans, their mandates professionally, it doesn't matter, right? And so specifically, if you're talking to a dedicated only healthcare fund, let's say, they're not interested. They don't care about, they don't care about semis. It doesn't have anything to do with their life. They have to figure out, do we overweight Novo versus Lilly? Or do we forget all of those and bet on ISRG? Or do we do something insane and say, hey, we'll put the whole thing in Pfizer because it finally will catch up? And they don't do that either because that's very reckless. So they're playing benchmark, playing chess with their respective bogeys, whatever that benchmark might be. And then they operate accordingly.
We had it all just like Bogey and Bacall. First person that gets that right, we'll send him something. I don't know. Let's look at your charts because Dan's all
in the family.
No.
Yeah, it was.
It's
no,
not.
Really?
No. Okay. Key Largo, Bertie Higgins. Largo, we had it all just like Bogey and Bacall. Nice. Sailing our
Bertie Higgins. In the all
nobody.
The
can I tell you something?
Nobody
knows
that.
I mean, maybe Doug Cass knows. He's watching. What were you going to say about All in the Family?
I thought it was that was something in the All in the Family theme song.
Those were the days, was the All in the Family.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
That's okay. Carter, you brought forth charts that apparently getting Dan excited. So let's walk through them, because I think what it's going to say is maybe finally, given these 30-year lot, maybe this thing is exhausting itself. Let's go through it.
So, yeah, these are very long-term charts. What I did, obviously, 1994 to 2024. And what we're looking at is a chart of the S&P arithmetic scale with no lines, no drawings. You know, you see the dot-com peak, the financial crisis low. You see the pre-financial crisis high, which matches. We had an unbelievable double top in 99 and then again in 07. And then, of course, the bull market since 09 with the COVID plunge and then the bear market of 2023. And here we are now. Now, let's put in the internal trend line. And for what it's worth, you know, just because you can touch 3 points, that's precious little. Two, you can connect any 2 points, but we are up against the internal trend line that the market has in effect since the dot-com peak. Let's annotate it further. And so those dates, you know, March 24th of 2000, January 4th of 2022, and then here we are March 4th of 2024. Now, if you put a parallel line, and that is a parallel blue line, I didn't make it fit. And notice it doesn't quite fit with the COVID low, and COVID, it sunk below that. But those are parallel lines. And so you have here some pretty key reference points, right? The dot-com peak, the financial crisis low in green, the COVID low, the peak of late 21, early 22, and then where we are now. Let's put in the midpoint arrows. Let's put in the midpoint with that. And so the question is, last chart, we put a question mark on it for clients. Look, there are many people who say, yeah, the question mark is green arrow, big highs from here. Other people believe it's a red arrow. And that's what makes a market. And there's no right or wrong. You have to make your money and control your losses when you have a bad one. But we wanted to put this out because it is optically appealing to the eye. The levels are what they are. And while one would say, well, we're not as expensive as we were at the peak of 2021, 22, nor are we as expensive as we were in the dot-com, the market is not cheap, right? So this we know. So the question is it a time to be adding, if you're talking about a steward of capital mm-hmm. exposed to the general equity market as measured by the S&P 500, should we be adding exposure? Should we be reducing exposure? I think at a minimum, one would say one reduces exposure.
It's interesting, as you said, Carter, you did not create those parallel lines. They are actually mathematically parallel lines. So that first line, the upper band, is obviously a line you drew. And then from that, you created the lower band in the parallel line. And then the middle one also. Now, the middle one is, Carter, what intrigues me, because obviously we spent a great deal of time basically right on that line. If you go back many, many years, you can see it until we subsequently broke down, traded back up to it, broke through it. So it stands to reason that if we are on the upper end of this band, this channel, first place it goes to and stops is the middle point. Not coincidentally, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, but that middle point probably comes in around 4,300 or so. It gets each day, it gets a little bit higher on time decay. But that's also, Dan, the 200-day moving average. So a lot of things line up right smack in the middle of this channel, Carter. Maybe you can speak to that quickly.
Yeah, I mean, and you don't have to, and you can see that you can overshoot. The question is, strength from here, the first thing, one could say, yeah, one's very bullish. That would put you outside the upper band. That seems less likely to me. So whether you can also ascend by walking along the upper band, you can just kind of keep ticking higher up against the band a little below. But were we to have a pullback, a correction, a dip, a decline, a drop, a plunge, the midpoint is certainly a reference. And so it is at 4,300 and rising, call it 4,500 for easy math. That would be a perfectly reasonable reset and would have nothing to do with valuation per se or for earnings growth or, frankly, interest rates. It's just the kind of thing that can happen. And I think, generally speaking, one wants to reduce one's exposure to the equity market.
Yeah, let's pull up the SPY chart here. So obviously that's the ETF that tracks the S&P 500. We're going to do it on a one-year basis. We're going to take a bit of a shorter-term view here to Guy's point about where that rising 200-day moving average is. It'll be at 460 pretty soon. Let's say we're trading at about 515 right now. We're about 12% above that. I think that was the percent above the 200-day back in July, Guy, when we were back towards those highs. Obviously, this has been, you know, from the October lows to where we are right now, we are up, you know, what is that, 25% or something?
Yeah,
like
and
that?
What's interesting about that quickly, and I want you to continue, but we did something with Elizabeth, I think it was yesterday, where I was bespoke, I think, pointed out how on the downside, I think it was at Apple, how far below it's moving at, and you know, they were ringing alarm bells. Yet what I pointed out was the upside is even more ridiculous for indices, individual names. Yet when it's to the upside, nobody seems to care about it. It's interesting, Carter. And I know you have some thoughts on this. And again, it echoes some of the things we've said, but when things go to the downside in a manner that's obviously alarming, everybody wants to point it out. But equally alarming to the upside, nobody seems to want to acknowledge it. Just quick thoughts on that.
Yeah, that's the human condition. Remember, I would say 99% of all capital is long only, right? I mean, yes, the hedge fund community is large and it's levered so that one could say the short exposure. But basically speaking, every home in America, every synagogue and church and museum and endowment, they're long equities. And so people and equities over time, markets go up 70% of the time, plus minus 7 years out of 10. And so it is right to generally have a long bias. And so when things are going very well, people don't typically see the excess as bad. Obviously, when things are very bad, they see the excess as being overdone. And it should be the equal and opposite, but it's not interpreted as equal and opposite.
Yeah. And that, I mean, listen, and again, I mean, I think a lot of our listeners, a lot of our viewers know where we were brought up on Wall Street. You know, I was at a long short equity hedge fund. We were just as prone to short a stock or buy a put as we were to buy a stock and buy a call. And a lot of the process that went into determining whether we're going to do one or the other was very similar. You know, it's based on a whole different set of inputs. You know, ours would usually start fundamentals. We definitely had plenty of technical sort of inputs. Carter, you've obviously spoken to our audience over the years and talked about how you used to be a fundamental analyst and you've migrated over the last, call it 25 plus years to just technicals only. And Guy was trading commodities and FX and lots of futures and stuff. So, you know, all those sorts of different instruments have different ways in which you can express views in the markets and manage your risk and the sort of timeframes you're focused on, which is kind of fun because we started out with those 30-year log charts and we're looking at those things. Now, I'm just looking as a trader right here, everything that you just said about the way people are exposed to the equity market, it's pretty much long only, buy and hold. And, you know, be careful though, because like the idea right here is we just talked about this SPY, it's up 25% from the October lows. And we're going to talk about the semis in a second. What's gone on there is should be alarming. Okay, it should be alarming the way that these stocks are gapping and moving. I've seen this before. I know how it ends. And so my only point is to some of the retail folk who sometimes get confused a little bit about where they are in the market. Carter, you use this expression, who they are in the market, right? And FOMO can really do a damage on long-term investing when you buy into bubbles and they burst and then you end up puking out of the things at the lows. I'm sure there's plenty of folks who are going to tell you how they never sold their Bitcoin or they never sold their Netflix down 75% or their Meta down 75% or any other one of those stocks in 2021 or 2022. But a lot of them did. You know why we know they did? Because we make those same mistakes. It's human nature, right? All right, let's look at this SPY right here. Rant over. Sorry, people. I want to look at the April options expiration here, and they don't have to pull it up. I'm just going to eyeball this thing. So if the ETF is trading at 515, if I want to try to figure out what the implied movement in the SPY between now and April 19th expiration, right? So that's obviously a little more than a month. We're going to start to get Q1 earnings in that expiration where you get a bunch of the banks, maybe even Netflix. That's why I want to focus over there. The at the money straddle, that is the 515 call and the 515 put. You put the premium of each one of those together. Let's call them, they're each about $9. Okay, that's about $18 combined. That is the implied movement between now and April expiration. Now you will have some decay. Let's just say the SPY just sits here for the next month. You're going to see premium come out of each of those, and that implied movement is going to go down as time lessens. But the point here is that if you want to spend $8.25 on an at the money put, you can do the math. Okay. That's less than 2%. That seems kind of cheap to me, right? So the options market is giving you certain opportunities. We've tried to be opportunistic in the SMH and done this sort of stuff. I had a good trade in the SMH a few weeks ago, then I had a really bad one. I'm trying to do it in the QQQ a little bit, but I just wanted to kind of put that in there. That's how we think about implied movement. That's how we think about playing things with defined risk. You could be a hedge. It could be a directional bet, that sort of thing. And even, hey, listen, maybe you want to lever up here and you don't want to buy more stocks. Maybe you think those calls look cheap to you, right? And you think we're about to blow out over the next month or so. I don't know. What the heck? All right, let's quickly talk about the semis here because we have Broadcom reporting tonight and we have Marvell, as you call it, Guy. Guy, talk to me a little bit. If you think back in your career, to see stocks gap up on a flat tape, okay? So like the group that's in vogue, let's say the S&P on most days has been up or down 15, 20 bips, right? Like as we're nearing the opening. But then you'll have a stock like NVIDIA gap up 2% or something like that. You can see it. Look at the chart over the last one. You know, like you see what's going on here, okay? give me your take on this, because we, again, I just said it, we've seen it before.
Well, we have seen it before. If we could do a longer term chart in the SMH, because I think this is interesting, you know, you will see, and we've brought this up before, but it's worth taking a look at. I mean, if you look at those prior double tops, so if you go to the prior highs, you can see, you can do a horizontal line across, and you can see that on the way up, we stopped there. We had a dramatic move lower, basically to the moving average, bounced off that, traded to a prior high, and then sold off. It's this last leg, obviously, that's caught not a lot of people. I can only speak for myself. It's clearly caught me off guard. But you talk about, again, standard deviations away from a moving average. I mean, this is one that sticks out like a sore thumb. So those prior resistance levels in the form of that past double top, to me, is going to be huge support. And quite frankly, it might not appear right now, but I think at some point we go back and take a look at it. So that's the way I'm looking at the SMH. In terms of Broadcom, which we obviously talk about, the symbol there is AVGO. You know, this is one that looks parabolic because, quite frankly, it probably is. But at least in Broadcom, it looks expensive because it's a $1,400 stock. The reality is, valuation-wise, it's actually one of the more reasonable ones out there, believe it or not. So this is one that we've actually been bullish on and correct. So here's the implied move. It's 9%, I think, up or down. We'll see how it plays itself out. But that's obviously a pretty large component of the SMH as well, Dan.
Yeah, Carter, speak to us a little bit before we hit Broadcom here, and we'll look at a better chart. We just wanted to use that to show the implied movement here. It's funny, there was a brokerage firm, you know, guy, when they start doing this, where they start raising their numbers and they just go really round numbers. You know what I mean? NVIDIA went to 1,000 even. You know, this one, Broadcom went to 1,500. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know that it's just, they can't even justify this stuff anymore, Carter. So talk to me a little bit about, like, just the behavior when you see things gapping this way on flat tapes when they are the in vogue sector.
Yeah, I mean, it's just what it's animal spirits. That's a sort of an expression that's crept into the vernacular over the last decade or two. But it's the definition of accumulation, right? Where you have these unusual heavy volume thrusts on any particular day. You get, they come in back-to-back days or week over week. It's what accumulation is. It's money moving in, and it's insensitive to price. You know, look at Target in response to its earnings. It had a preceding gap. It gets a second gap. So we'll see. But maybe you need to have a few more of these before it's exhausted. But at the end of the day, the semis, and this is important, we've discussed this as a group, the three of us and with everyone, the semis just last week for the first time recouped all their relative losses associated with the dot-com peak. So 24 years later, the excess, and both on the way up, the dot-com peak, the plunge, has all been sort of cleaned up. And semis now, while way above their own respective dot-com peak on a relative basis, are even with the S&P for the first time in 24 years. Interestingly, they're getting steep again.
I think Carter has to bounce in a second. Real quick, Dubs, before you get out, you brought, and I want to just run through these quickly because they're similar channels. Eli Lilly, Novo Nordisk, and then obviously a combination of the two.
Let's look. So because we were looking at long-term charts for the S&P, I thought we'd do that same exercise here with Lilly. So that is a mathematically perfect 45-degree angle. It's logarithmic scale, which mutes the rate of change. And yet still, Lilly is now outside the upper band. If we look at Novo, and let's toggle, it's not. We can go back and forth, toggle. One is outside of the band, one isn't. Now let's put them rather than individually, but together. And there you see Lilly, obviously ahead of Novo. In a way, this is a pair. I would rather be long Novo and short Lilly. They're very correlated, but betting on that one is a little ahead of itself or more ahead of itself than the other.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was a great Carter Braxton worth of Worth Charting. You should, if you don't get his work,
you got to get it. It's so good. I love it. It's one of my first reads every day. So Carter Braxtonworth, thank you for being here.
Thanks,
with
man.
Us.
We'll see
you. And we're glad you're feeling better.
Yeah. Hey, you know what's interesting? So Carter and I on Monday, we're going to, when I say Madison Square Garden, what do you
usually
say?
This is what I think of.
What do you usually say?
Well, it's the world's most famous arena.
Yes.
And that happens to be true.
Yes.
I also think Paul McCartney and Wings sang a song. It was rock show into, it was Venus and Mars into rock show into Jet. And in the song Rock Show, Paul McCartney sings Long Hair at the Madison Square.
Oh, yeah. So here's the thing.
So that's what I think
about.
For
all of our very dedicated listeners and viewers of Market Call,
yeah.
You know, so I'm going to go with Carter to MSG. And this is when I say, no, we're going to the Ranger game. And this is when I say to Guy, so if we didn't have the mic and the cameras on, I would say, Guy, why don't you come with us? And what do you say?
Have a good time.
Yeah. Like, it's the weirdest thing.
And why is that weird?
Because you were the biggest Ranger fan I know on the planet. And you,
I am. I am as steadfast and ardent a Ranger fan as anybody.
Not?
I'm sure. Look, I don't say I'm the biggest, but I am.
You are.
I mean, I could wax poetic about Ranger.
You are a
history.
Big one.
I mean, I think I started. Well, I can remember as early as 1971.
Really?
The 71, 72
born in
63. Season. I was born in 60. Late December.
Deck 18.
Late December. Back.
You know who
in
else
63?
Was born? Deck
Brad
18.
Pitt.
Yeah, 1963.
Keith Richards.
Yeah, but
1943. Steven Spielberg. I can continue this.
That's amazing.
More. Christina Aguilera, Katie Holmes. I mean, it's a laundry list of people.
Katie Holmes.
Sure.
Love Katie Holmes.
Not KB Holmes.
That's Doc. All right.
By the way, Amanda, do you have that picture? Because if you do, you should flash.
So
we had a couple.
Here's another
thing
that's going on in Madison Square Garden this week that is totally weird, Guy. So I've lived in the city since 1996. Mm. Okay. I've been to MSG, you know, a gazillion
Butters
times.
Is going
to
be at Madison Square?
No.
No.
So you ready for this? On Sunday, the New York Knickerbockers, they host the 76ers of Philadelphia.
Sure.
On Tuesday, the New York Knickerbockers host the 76ers.
Quirky as hell.
Is that weird?
Strange. You know, you get these anomalies every
but
once in a while.
Have you ever seen that?
I've seen similar, but it does not happen often.
It's weird.
Yes, so is the word weird.
I feel like the Rangers last year had two same team in week, but not 2 days apart. Yeah. Okay. For whatever that's worth. I just wanted to.
So you're going to be at MSG.
Yeah.
By then.
If you want to meet Carter Braxton Worth, maybe we'll have him bring some headshots, some signed headshots. So come up, say hello, buy him a beer, get a headshot. Right.
Anyway.
That would be a good promo.
No? Today's what?
Today's Thursday.
What does that mean?
It means it's Butters.
I didn't see. I didn't do it.
Well,
so,
we have a couple more earnings.
Oh, you want to go through some stuff? Because Costco's today too.
Yeah. So this is one. You know, it's interesting. As certain parts of the tech complex have kind of chilled out a little bit. You know, other areas with yields coming in have done pretty well. Like, you know, you just mentioned KB Home. Home builders are raging. Okay. So we have a 10-year at 4.15. You know, everything out of the Fed, though, Guy, over the last couple of days, this Humphrey Hawkins, I don't get some, like, I would have thought yields would be up. You know what I mean? Like, let's pull up a yield chart really quickly. Wouldn't you thought, just at least the headlines. I'm
it's
not sitting in there in
no,
Congress listening
to
every word he's saying
with
and this and whatever. I'm just surprised that there's been downward pressure on yields this week.
Down, I mean, obviously, I think we got up to 431.
Yeah.
You know, I got to look and see exactly where we are right now. But yields are actually a tad higher today. But, you know, they keep exhausting themselves.
It looks toppy, doesn't it?
I think, it does. Part of the yield move to me was the news out of China, which sort of, I think you had people flocking to U.S. yields as sort of this flight to safety. We'll see. I mean, there are a lot of cross currents here without question, but the reality, it is what it is. I mean, yields coming down 15 or so basis points of obviously whatever headwind was created has been somewhat, you know, abated a bit.
You know what we're going to do right now? Because we are coming up against time, as you like to say, and we want to spend a few minutes on Butters too, but I want to rip through all these earnings because I think tonight could be a really interesting night.
Yeah.
Okay, you and I are going to be on the desk of Fast Money. We're going to be parsing through a lot of this earnings stuff. Let's start with Broadcom again because Carter actually brought a chart too, but let's look at our chart really quickly. You can see the implied movement, and what we're just trying to show is like where that could go to the upside if it were to match the implied move and where it could go to the downside there. Let's look at Carter's chart really quickly here because I think it's kind of interesting. Look at that. That's that internal trend line. You know, he's going to tell you on the bottom end, that's not a trend. That's just one point there. Thoughts on the importance, Guy? We made the mistake. I made the mistake February 21st when Broadcom, it seemed like the whole investment world was focused on what NVIDIA meant for the broader market. Now that's a much bigger stock. It's now over $2 trillion. Broadcom, what if they were to offer some guidance that doesn't line up with some of the other things that we've heard from some of these other companies and
companies? Great point. This is, I think they're approaching $650 billion. So this is not insignificant. Obviously a big part of many of these ETFs. However, to answer your question specifically, the one thing they do have going for them, Broadcom, is they have a multiple cushion. They have a valuation cushion. It doesn't trade in an absurd valuation. So that what you just pointed out, that scenario should be somewhat mitigated by the valuation cushion that they have. With that said, the flip side of that coin is maybe there's a reason why it doesn't trade at the same multiple as some of these other companies. So maybe a disappointing guide would actually be sort of fodder for the people that say, you know what, it doesn't deserve a valuation. Mm-hmm. So maybe in a company that has a reasonable valuation, you could see the outside move to the downside, as somewhat counterintuitive as that might sound.
I get it. All right, let's look at Marvell here for a second here, because this one has a big implied move. This stock is up 40% on the year. It's trading at an all-time high. This does not have the thing that you talked about, Guy. It does not have that valuation support. So they're going to report their Q4 results tonight. And then they're probably going to give guidance for fiscal year 2025. Earnings estimates are expected to be up after a big down year, last year. They're expected to be up about 30% or so. Revenues expected to be up high single digits after being down high single digits. Again, this stock trades at about 41 times
next
current year's, 12 times sales.
Yeah.
And one of the big things, and you mentioned this immediately on the desk of Fast Money after NVIDIA came out, this is a company that's built a software ecosystem. They have higher gross margins than most semiconductors, 77%. This is a lower gross margin company, Guy, around 60% or so. That's down 5 percentage points from 2023. Thoughts on Marvell?
This one. See, it's interesting. You look at it, you say you mentioned 41 times. You're right, 100%. You can say year over year, maybe they're looking at 30% EPS growth. I get it. Of course, the problem is in terms of when you look at it price to sales, which, again, it is historically pretty expensive. This is a company now, I think it's a $73 billion company-ish, and you're talking about revenues, maybe $6 billion of revenue. So you can start doing that math. It's not cheap. So they have to listen. I think they have to continue to say what the market wants to hear. Now, if you do a longer term chart in Marvell quickly, you will see that we are reaching levels we last saw in January of 2022. So you had a huge move to You had a huge move to the downside. And now we're fast approaching, I think, the levels that we saw may have been, Dan, like little north of $90 or so way back in the day. So that's one that I would be taking a look at as well. And again, with each passing day, you talk about standard deviations away from the historic, the moving average. Well, this one's doing it too.
Yeah. So I made a mistake. I said all-time high, but obviously you
It's close.
Yeah. But what's interesting. And I can't remember what stock we were talking about. Yeah. Oh, it was Adobe yesterday on the market call. And, again, that chart, the Adobe chart looks almost the same, except that it's gone the other way rather than breaking out of that recent flag. It's kind of dropped down a little bit. And, we were just talking about the goofiness in late 2021 versus what's going on now. At least right now, it's not some, like I said, I use the term goofy. The whole idea was look how all these companies have come out of COVID. They're so much in better shape, all that sort of stuff. This is a secular trend that everybody can agree is going to change the way so many different industries operate and this and that, whatever. But look at these companies that are expected to be, why aren't they trading at their all-time highs? The stock market's at the all-time highs. You know what I mean?
It's interesting. So Adobe's $250 billion company. Yeah. And it's much, if you think, again, just to be consistent, we just looked at Broadcom. We just looked at what was Marvell. Yeah. Sorry. And now in terms of being many standard deviations away, this one is actually approaching its moving average. So this is one you want to have your radar screen that if we were to get down there, you want to take a look at that.
You want to be constructive on a good, high quality name like that, that maybe is being underappreciated for what they're doing in the space. All right, here's one. I don't know why, you and I have been doing, I've been doing Fast Money with you since 2011.
Amazing.
You've been doing it since 1986. I was going to be real.
06.
For a second.
I mean, I know it's crazy.
I was going to be real for
06.
A second. The show started every day at some point. 07. Okay.
Yeah.
So Costco, you probably said it 100 times over the last 17 years.
I am certain
that the valuation will never make sense. So this is not a stock that you want to look at, right?
100%.
I've heard you say it 50 times, okay? And that's not being redundant. It's been the case. Pull the chart up. It's never mattered. This is not Amazon.com. This is not NVIDIA or anything. It looks like it.
And we've tried to point out that if you're looking, again, you think we're always, I'm negative. I'm not always negative. And this is one that we've actually been positive on. And today, as we're sitting here, this is another stock that's making an all-time high. Now, of course, to your point, the first thing people look at and say the valuation does not make any sense. Totally understand. What they have going, if you remember back in the day, IBM was given a premium valuation because they had a recurring revenue stream that, that gave them clarity. Yeah. They could say, whatever the world's going to have, we know this is coming in. It's the same thing with Costco in a different way. It comes through the membership thing, which I think is like 93% renewal rate or something absurd like that. So,
but it is only a single digit, low single digit percent of their revenue.
No, agreed.
And we made that 100%. Also, I think it's really important because a lot of folks, you know, who are just kind of the, always the pom-poms out, and this is like an easy stock to be a cheerleader for, they talk about it in a way like it's like, you know, but
it's a low percentage, yeah. But at least, you know, yeah, what you know is, yeah, you know, it's there, and you know, these people are coming in the stores.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And if you are a member at an organization like this, you're going to spend a lot more than the average.
100%. It's not like you're some bullshit membership like a Sports Illustrated where you don't even realize you're getting a magazine. I mean, this, if you have a membership there, there's one a very good chance.
One time a year, you realize you're getting that magazine.
Which one?
The Sports Illustrated.
When the hockey playoff preview comes out?
Yeah, that one.
Which is going to come out soon, I'm sure.
That one.
I know what you're talking about.
I know.
I was never, you know what?
Go there,
no, you know? Because I was never into that.
Okay.
Dan's talking about, I think this is actually the time of year where the swimsuit, maybe.
Correct. It's, it is. It's right around, it's in mid-February.
Comes out. It's like, you know what, people?
Okay.
If that's the under. Sorry. By the way, does Amanda have a picture of
Wendberg? He was doing
Wendberg?
That to me.
I mean, you got to pull that. Amanda, seriously, if you have this, you got to throw this picture up. This guy is. I mean,
Amanda only said, she said she's only going to pull it up if you go to the Ranger game on Monday with Dan and Carter. All right. If it's Thursday on the market call, we get a preview of the Earnings Insight blog that is written over there. I'm going to do this again.
Yeah.
By
because
John
we want to make sure. No, because we want to clip this.
Yeah. Well, hold on a second.
Let's do it again.
If it's Thursday, guy, on the market call, we get to preview John Butters. He's the senior earnings insight analyst over there at FactSet, his earnings insight blog, which drops on Fridays. You can have it in your inbox at insight.factset.com/subscribe. But we're going to always pick out just one little tidbit, or maybe two, right, that we find really interesting. We're going to preview it for our market call audience here. This one's kind of interesting. We just highlighted the fact, guy, that we're getting towards the end of Q3, okay? We're going to start focused on basically, or the end of Q1, excuse me, but we're in the third month of Q1 here, and we're going to start focusing on what guidance looks like for the balance of the year. Now, all of us have been a bit surprised. When I say all of us, I think everybody in the investor community, even the staunch bulls, of the fact that, you know, we really haven't seen earnings estimates come down meaningful for this year. So this is why Q1 is going to be really important, especially after the fact that we have stocks raging where they are. John Butters this week wants to focus on this one word, guy. You know what that word is?
I don't use it because I say all the time I'm not smart enough nor humorless enough to be an economist, but I'll say it because Butters said it. Recession is the word.
There it is. Okay. So the term recession was cited on the Q4 2023 earnings calls of 46 S&P 500 companies. Now you can do the math. 546. It's a little less than
9.2%.
Holy. Did you just do that in your head?
I'm actually, pretty good.
I thought that. Okay. It said this.
Well, the other day. Well, forget it. This, but that whole options thing, you looked at me like.
You were amazing. You were amazing. Okay. This marked the lowest number since Q4 2021 and the sixth straight quarter the number has declined. So when you think about that Q4 2021, it was pretty much, you know, pandemic over. We're coming out. It was all systems go. The stock market was raging, that sort of thing. When you see a stat like that, guy, and given, you know, where you are on the market, and you obviously think that S&P earnings are going to be kind of high for this year, it's telling you that the C-level suite is not worried about a recession right here.
It's interesting. I mean, not that I want anybody to do this, but I bet if you overlaid an S&P chart, it would look really weird in terms of when people the most pessimistic, or in other words, using recession the most, that was probably at the trough of things. And conversely, now that people seemingly it's out of their purview, out of their line of sight, you know, you can make an argument that maybe this is sort of the peak of things. We are going to find out, obviously, but this is interesting to see that significant drop off of people citing or talking about the possibility or the inevitability of a recession.
All right. So then here's another word I want you to just remember.
It's not a word.
It's called visibility.
Oh, thank you.
Visibility.
I thought it was gonna
be something else. This is where I'm going to go to on this. All right. So this next tidbit I think is really interesting from Mr. Butters here. The term soft landing was cited. Well, that's Butters. I mean, like, listen, you know, but the term soft landing was cited on Q4 2023 earnings calls of 37 of the S&P 500 companies. How many is that, guy?
Well, you can do, you want to learn how to do this?
Yes, do it.
I mean, what's 30 plus 30?
It's 60.
What's 7 plus 7?
It's 14.
What's 60 plus 14?
It's 74.
7.4%.
This is amazing. See, look at that. Amanda, you got to put that on the socials there. Okay, so
see the way I did 7.4%
of the S&P 500 companies use the term soft landing. But here's the important part. This marked the highest number going back at least 3 years.
Yeah.
So the term that you would represent with maybe the stock market being okay because the economy is okay, this or whatever, at the highest number in 3 years, it's still 7.4%, not particularly high. And then recession is going down. So what it speaks to me, guy, is that in the middle, there's a lot of companies that lack visibility. Does that make some sense? Is that an okay, like, kind of takeaway from this in a way?
I think that is a very fair assessment. And that lack of visibility has made its way into more and more companies not giving guidance anymore because, quite frankly, it's very hard for them too. Now, we have a differing opinion on this. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm a believer that if you don't have visibility, don't give guidance. I think you look at it differently.
Yeah.
There's some companies out there that you could drive a friggin' truck through their guidance. I don't think that helps anybody. There are other companies who's, you know, they're just throwing darts and you look at it and you're like, you gave this guidance and you missed by X or you beat by X. What was even the point? But with that said, I think your point is exactly right. There is a lack of visibility out there.
All right. Well, that's it. That was Mr. John.
Can we
Butters
pull up the picture of this guy?
Blog. Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, by the way,
seriously, look at this guy.
Yeah.
That's not Photoshopped. That's him.
You want to hear something really exciting? So I'm going to see him play on Monday. You could come
join
me.
You can play. He's going to play on Saturday.
I know, but I'm actually going Saturday night too.
There you go.
All right. So I'm going to see him play Saturday night.
He's wearing, if anybody cares, he's wearing 91.
You want to hear something really exciting? So on Tuesday, I think it's Tuesday, Martin, but sometime next week, John Butters is going to be in the flesh with us, not in person,
what?
But he's going to be on the program with us
next
on
week?
The market call. Yes, I believe so.
From like Wisconsin.
Wisconsin or wherever he's from.
Michigan. Where does he go?
He's from Massachusetts.
You're going to get
to meet him face to face.
He goes to Lake Winnipesaukee is where he goes, in New Hampshire.
Does he?
Yeah, I think that's right.
You can't dox him like that.
Why not?
I don't know. All right.
We're going to see Butters at the end of April.
We're going to the FactSet Focus event. It's in Miami. It's at the end of April, and it's going to be a killer event. We can't wait.
I don't even know how he's going to be able to walk around there.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, he's like the Elvis Presley of this world.
Yeah.
You've created this.
You've created it.
No, you know, it's a group effort.
All right.
I've had fun. That picture is not Photoshopped.
It's not.
That's the newest New York Ranger. He's the best looking man in professional hockey.
Yeah.
And he's a center. He's about 6'1", 215. Listen, he's not going to light the scoreboard up for you. I'm just telling you. But you know what? He plays an honest game.
Yeah.
And you need a stud in the middle. So this, now their third line center problem is fixed. You still need a first line right wing. And it's either to come into form of Frank Vetrano, who played for the Rangers. Dan's just like, okay, stop. Or Jake Guentzel, who's in Pittsburgh.
But you know why I said stop? Because there's a show in the mornings that you could call into.
I'd call those guys.
And your guy from Morristown. Yeah. And they love your takes on the Rangers, on the Yankees, on the Knicks, on
Boomer
the New York Giants.
I like those guys.
I know. And they like you.
So in other words, before we go.
Dime.
Yeah.
Call before somebody
Dan's,
who cares.
What Dan is saying is the people here are not, they're not, they don't care what you think about Ranger hockey
care.
Or Knick basketball or Yankee baseball
a little bit.
Or New York Giant football. By the way, the Giants are basically telling Saquon, you know what? It's been nice.
I know.
Go find, if you want to find a better deal here, go ahead.
Weren't they kind of saying that last year?
Well, no, because they tagged them.
Yeah.
And now
that's right.
Xavier McKinney, who's their safety, I like him out of Alabama. I loved him when they drafted him. He seems to be, I don't want to say a head case, but, you know, there are obviously some reasons why the Giants probably don't want him back.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be tagged either. So it's going to be an interesting draft for the Giants. I still think the guy you want to pick is Joe Alt Jr. out of Notre Dame. I'm building in my offensive line. A lot of people say you're out of your friggin' mind, which is true. A lot of people like the wide receiver. A lot of people like the wide receiver out of Washington or the kid from LSU. One of them is going to be available because Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah,
is going to be the first the wide receiver pick.
He's
not the best wide
receiver.
You know
where Marvin Harrison Sr. went to college?
I should know that.
You should know that.
I want to say the U. Where do you go?
Syracuse University.
Cuse. Yeah. You know what? I did know that.
He's great. He played with McNabb.
Donovan McNabb.
Yeah.
Who the Rangers don't. The Rangers. The Giants don't need a quarterback.
Really?
They don't need
You've been saying that for years, but lots of folks who've heard you talk about Daniel Jones on the shows over the last few years, they come up to you. Literally, they come up to you and they say, I think you're wrong.
And I might, you know what? I might be wrong. When the Giants drafted Phil Sims out of Morehead State, nobody ever heard of, I never heard of Phil Sims. Remember, this is back in the day. They didn't have all this draft bullshit.
Was it late 70s? 70s. Early 80s.
And then people are like, well, I got to look and see what that draft was. That was before LT. And LT was, I think, 82. Whatever. It took Phil Sims like 5 years solid to make a dent to even start. My point is, quarterbacks are not giving him. It takes time for these guys to grow into the position.
Can I ask you a
Amanda's
question?
Amanda's texting us.
One last question. So
bye. Boomer, I mean, she's going. She's
Boomer
leaving.
And Phil Sims. They sit on the end of the desk.
They look like each other.
But, but they sit on the end of the desk of, what is it, NFL Today or whatever?
I think it's CBS.
So, all right, so let me ask you this. In 15, they're both like probably 65, probably.
No, Booms, I think it's, 62, 63.
Right, so in 15 years, who is going to be on those desks? Who's going to be like owning those desks?
Good question.
It's kind of interesting.
They're obviously grooming. You can see.
Is it Romo? Grooming. Does he get out of the booth?
Romo
and he goes
sucks.
In?
Romo's awful. J.J. Watt. They're clearly grooming certain.
He's
people.
He's not great yet. He needs a few.
No,
more
he
reps.
Needs. No, he.
You know why he needs reps? Because how many weeks? There's only 17 weeks.
No, but
in
that's
the NFL.
You see what they want. Like
reps.
That's what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Amanda. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah, it has been fun.
Butters, we got. Thank you, John Butters. Thank you, the great Carter Braxton Worth. Yeah. Thank you for Wenberg, who's a stud. We got that picture up. Nobody had that shit on their bingo card. Nor did they have the tunnel and wherever you mentioned
the Murray Hill tunnel,
but that's why you play. That's why you come. That's why you watch it. You never know what's going to happen. Nor do I, by the way.
Yeah.
But I want to thank everybody for joining us. Tomorrow's Friday. By the way, it's just a matter of time. I don't know if this makes people happy or not. Before market call is Monday through Friday. Like we take Fridays. We have a lot of there's a number of different reasons why, but it's just there's an inevitability to it. Number one. And thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, everyone.
By the way, our podcast, which will drop tomorrow, we got Brian Belsky coming in.
Oh, we do. And actually, and Melissa Lee. CNBC's
we mentioned
Melissa
that the
Lee.
Other day.
That'll be fun.
So it's going to be like an A block and a B block.
And another one I would say is really interesting is that yesterday it dropped on the tape feed, Danny Moses, who's our podcast partner, Vincent Daniel, and Porter Collins of Seabreeze. Those three had an awesome conversation. So go check that. That's already in your podcast feed, guy.
Yeah, you should be listening to that. Those guys together are pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah.
No, they're just sort of fun. They're quirky as hell. Like, there's some weird dude. And I say, can I tell you something? Being a weird dude myself, I appreciate that. I have story next week.
What's the
week.
Thing that's weird about the word weird?
The way it's spelled.
Oh.
Because it's I before E.
Yeah, except after.
Except after C.
Yeah.
Or when sounding like way as in neighbor
I think
and
a lot
slay.
Of people don't know that last bit, though.
Or when sounding like you know what I mean? Way as in neighbor and slay.
Yeah.
Slay being S-E-S-L-E-I-G-H, like the thing
like
you ride
slay.
In the snow.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I slayed that trade. That's S-L-A-Y. Nah. Now, of course, weird is none of those things, which makes weird.
Weird. What do you think the thing that most folks, whether it's real or not real, is the most slayed thing in their just repertoire of things that are slayed?
What does that mean?
Well, just think when you think of slaying something, what do you slay?
It's a good question.
A dragon.
Like a dragon.
Yeah.
Oh, you want? I thought.
You understand what I'm saying?
Like, no. You're slaying dragons.
You're slaying dragons.
Well, it's interesting because if you remember, if you go way back in time, Cervantes, right?
Yeah.
Remember, they slayed the.
I don't remember Cervantes.
Windmills. You don't know this.
No.
Like they fought windmills.
Okay.
That's literature. You don't know this?
I know that you know literature. You're like one of the best read men that I know.
It's been fun.
All right. See you later.
We'll see you guys Monday. Bye.